artificial intelligence can make our life easier. The question is, can it improve our health? Can it help to prevent disease? Well, guess what? I've got an answer to that. It already is. Today, we learn more about AI and our health. Thanks for listening and subscribing to Learning More. This week, we are talking about AI and your health. And we're not talking about AI as in, is your Alexa going to be able to make your coffee? No, we're talking about this in a much broader sense and how AI can help your health in the future and what it can do now. To do this, I'm talking with a venture partner, an author, and a podcaster, Harry Glorikian. Thank you so much for joining me today, Harry.
Thank you so much for having me.
Earlier, when we were doing a little pre-interview here, you said that you're at the intersection of data and biology. I love that. Can you tell us what you're doing and what you mean by the intersection of data and biology?
Yeah, my day job is venture investing. So I'm constantly looking at companies that have an understanding of the biology, and that could be near the patient, it could be in drug discovery, it could be in a number of areas, but they're utilizing some form of data analytics and technology to sort of move the process forward faster to identify something or monitor something, say in a patient, and then highlight it. So it depends on the use case, but it's all about where those two pieces come together and can move the needle.
So are we getting to a point of where AI is making health decisions for us?
So I think the best examples right now are happening in, say, in where you would take an image of something, say a radiology, like a CT, an X-ray, or something like that, where the AI system would highlight something. Mm-hmm. Essentially, it is diagnosing, but then it would share it with the radiologist, and the radiologist would then be able to confirm it. And what we've noticed is the two together score better than anyone alone at the moment.
And so it's sort of double checking right now. We're still getting the human involved in this.
Absolutely.
At this point.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And from a regulatory perspective or the FDA, I would, you know, for something to make the call 100% on its own without a validation, that's sort of like, it's going to take us a while to get there. And so the two together seem to work really well. And we're seeing more and more things go through the FDA. Like I think it was earlier this year, we saw the first prostate cancer pathology test get FDA cleared, where the system would look at the slide, highlight it. You still want a pathologist to validate it, right? But mm-hmm. it's moving along very quickly. And we can do that very well with images. If you think about how long we've been looking at satellite imagery, right? From the military and stuff like that. We're very good at that sort of analysis. Now, if you take other things like ECGs, EKGs, you know, if something looks out of whack, you know, the AI system can sort of highlight that pattern looks, something looks up, right? And sort of it can highlight to a physician that they may want to take a look at something.
I would imagine that there's plenty of just the human eye missing things. So it's kind of nice to have this AI as a backup to be able to look at this. But at what point do you think, and I'm sure that there's plenty of laws and, you know, regulations all standing in the way of this becoming the main look, but at what point will this become, do you think, kind of the main diagnosis?
I think it's already starting to play a major role in, again, it depends on the disease and the area mm-hmm. and so forth. I mean, we're still evolving this, but it's moving pretty fast. You know, people always say, oh, this is going to take so much longer. And I'm like, are you not watching how quickly these things are turning? Right. And so they write a paper. It was making a few mistakes, say in January. Okay, and then another paper comes out in December, and you notice like it's not making those mistakes anymore. I mean, it's the turns are incredibly quick on the technology side that are improving these systems. it's not going to take 10 or 20 years.
Yeah. And that's interesting. Whenever I talk AI on a podcast or which is in general conversation with somebody, it always gets into sort of the bias of the AI, because the AI is essentially, it's a computer looking at a data set that was programmed in by somebody or something. How are the data sets being populated?
So again, you know, depending on what the company's doing, they're trying to get a broad data set of different samples or different people that they can then, you know, test the system out on or train it, mm-hmm. and then modify it until it's to the point where they're ready to move it forward. But again, I think that's why some level of regulatory approval is a good thing, because
right.
they're gonna hold your feet to the fire to, you know, yeah. make sure that it isn't only working on one subpopulation, right? And if it does, the label will say, hey, by the way, this really should only be used in this one subpopulation, just like we do with drugs, right? You mm-hmm. you have to give that drug to a particular person that fits that criteria, as opposed to give it to everybody.
Right. Now, okay, so why is this important? Why is AI an important addition to our health?
So I think it can look at lots of data at one time and make sense of it. Or I don't like using the word make sense, because it's actually not a sentient being. It's, right. It can organize it and process it quite rapidly. So for example, like I think, you know, if you go to a hospital like Geisinger, which is in Western Pennsylvania, their system will look at all the CT scans. And if it notices that somebody has like a cranial bleed, like, you know, they bump their head and there's a bleed, it'll actually move that one to the front of the line so that, you know, radiologist looks at that first, right? So it actually like changes the order to tell you, like, you really need to pay attention to this one right. first. So it's things like that that will make a huge difference in, you know, a patient's life.
Right. Now, so I could see applications within, like you're mentioning, within a hospital, and even dealing with like alerts, right? Like I read something about the number of alerts that a doctor hears within a shift, is, and it's some like overwhelming number. It could even be looked at into that, whereas alerts within their floor, within their shift, could be prioritized so that they're only paying attention to the most important ones, or at least paying attention to the most important ones first, and not just the come in and change the TV station or, you know, whatever yeah. the notification is.
Yeah. I mean, there are systems now that can sort of give you an, I say to you, hey, listen, the person in bed four looks like they're going to head towards a problem. Mm. And it could be 2 days before the problem. Right. And so here's some ideas on what you may or may not want to do. Now, it doesn't tell the doctor what to do or whatever, but it's sort of, you might want to pay attention to this.
Right.
And so they understand which one they may need to go and take a deeper look into. But it goes all the way to, you know, an individual patient. I mean, my watch and an app on my phone called Cardiogram, you know, binged me and said, hey, have you ever been diagnosed with sleep apnea? And it was just off my heartbeat that it was noticing that I may have sleep apnea.
Interesting.
And I have actually been diagnosed with sleep apnea. So that, you know, of course, mm-hmm. the damn thing was right.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can imagine that individuals with different wearable technologies or different app technologies could be alerted to something that, you know, before it becomes a full-blown problem, right?
Right.
This is where I see the huge power of these technologies, because if you have one of these underlying conditions and don't know about it, you know, you die a very unpleasant, slow downward yeah. decline.
Right.
If you knew about it ahead of time and you can make the course corrections, maybe you can avoid it altogether, or maybe you can push it off, you know, to a much later stage of life.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. It's like, you know, for years, it was pretty impossible to get a doctor on the phone, right? To actually call and talk to your doctor, you're going to be on hold forever, or you're going to have to make an appointment for 2 weeks from now. But now the doctor's actually with you on your phone within these apps in many ways. And that's kind of interesting as well.
Yeah. I mean, I always tell people, like, you should really make sure you talk to your doctor, because who knows who I have no idea what their whole condition is. Right. And so that has some specificity to it, but I mean, these technologies can sort of help you course correct.
Right.
And yeah, when you course correct, it can sort of optimize, you know, better health.
Right.
You know, I use stuff where I monitor my sleep, right, to help me figure out like how to get that in the right place so that I have more energy. But we all know that as you get more sleep and you sleep better, your body can repair itself. You know, you have more energy. There's all sorts of good stuff, right? When you don't get sleep, I always tell people, I'm like, remember, the first way we torture people is we, you know, deprive them of sleep, right? Because it causes all sorts of stuff to break down. So getting good sleep is actually quite important. I mean, you know, the listeners can't see it, but I'm wearing a CGM on my arm, which is a continuous glucose monitor. So I put in what I'm about to eat. I wave my phone over my little CGM that I've got on my arm, and it tells me, you know, my glucose levels. And, you know, did I eat something that caused me to spike or not? And then I can adjust my diet accordingly so that I can keep it flat. And the flatter you keep it, the more energy you have and the less you're taxing your system.
Now, are you diabetic or are you just...
Nope.
So you've just chosen to do the glucose monitoring as more of a preventative thing.
Yeah, there's a couple of companies out there. One is, I think both of them are in the Bay Area. One is called Levels and one is called January. And they both make CGMs available to, you know, the average person. You can sort of, over a month, it's 2 weeks and then another 2 weeks. And then... it's funny because the AI system then learns how all the different types of food you've eaten over that 1 month affect you. And then therefore it sort of knows what the future foods will have an effect, and sort of you can manage your diet accordingly just based on that. And the number of people in the United States that are pre-diabetic is a huge number. They just don't know it.
Right.
If you knew it, yeah, I bet you if you said to everybody, hey, you're like moving towards being diabetic, do you really want to stick yourself with a needle or do you want to adjust yourself now?
Right.
A lot of people might say, you know, the sticking with the needle thing is not ideal. So maybe I'll make some course correction, you know, along the, you know, before I get there.
Yeah. What's interesting about this is you wearing these devices and it learning from you, it seems like it's difficult to bias that sort of AI because it's actually learning from you over a 30-day period. For instance, your CGM monitor is learning how the food impacts you, and so it's in a way prescribing something specifically to you based on that data.
Yes, for the most part. I mean, like my couple of my devices this morning were like, man, your HRV or the time between heartbeats was incredibly low. You may want to take it easy today. Now, it was probably the, you know, two glasses of Tito's and tonic last night late with friends that probably ruined my sleep pattern, but it picked it up and it said, hey, you know, be alerted to this.
Right.
And so it's not a nagging thing. I try to tell people it's sort of just this subtle reminder. And right. If you choose to course correct, right, you can. On the other hand, you know, if you're going to have a late night with your buddies, you know, you already know what the consequences are. So you're going into it like, you know, willingly.
Right.
I think these things do make a big difference. I tell people something simple, just like a wireless scale. Where you can see the line over time, and you see if you see the line creeping up, it can sort of give you that. it's not even a nudge. The thing is not even telling you anything. It's your own brain saying the line is headed in the wrong direction.
Right.
Maybe I should correct it a little bit.
Right. Eat a few less chips or stop going to fast food.
it could be any one of those things that sort of, you know, all of our other devices have dashboards or monitors or things like that. And they say, hey, you know, something, you're low on gas, your oil's low, you're something, you know, tire pressure is off, something's off, right? And then, well, we don't want it to break, so we actually go fix it. These technologies are now highlighting things that we can actually go in and proactively manage.
Right. It's kind of like the sci-fi movies, right? Like the old Star Trek, where they would wave something over somebody, diagnose them, and then wave something over them again and fix it. Like that could be where we head someday. Like we look at these sci-fi things as sci-fi. And, well, maybe it is just our future. I know it's a little far off, perhaps, but that would be absolutely amazing. Okay, we've got to take a short break here. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation about AI and your health. And thanks for listening and subscribing to Learning More. We're back. It's Russ with you. And we are talking about AI and your health. Now, when I think about AI, one of the things is you've got to feed it a lot of data. Well, one of the unfortunate things about the pandemic is we just had a big download of data, right? Like there's a lot of data sets there that could potentially help these AIs in the future. Did we learn a lot from the pandemic, and is that going to help us kind of go further down the path with AI?
Well, there were some things that, you know, tectonic shifts that people don't fully appreciate, right? Like when the pandemic was coming, like, first of all, we could see it coming. There were AI systems, I forgot the name of the system up in Canada, that gave them an early warning that this thing was coming, and they actually got to order supplies before anybody else. But then things like we did the genomic sequencing of COVID in 48 hours. Now, when we worked on SARS, because I was at the company that did it at that time, it took us 4 months to sequence that one. This one took 48 hours. Wow. So much, much faster. Then we applied a new technology, which is programmable, you know, mRNA technology, which is the vaccine is designed on. We had the first products ready to try as a vaccine 48 hours after that. So in, you know, 4 or 5 days, we went from we don't know anything to we know something to now we have something to treat it with. And it changed the entire paradigm of, you know, going from nothing to having a finished vaccine in 9 months. And, you know, we did a lot of things in parallel. I believe that some of those changes, the FDA and industry will look at each other and say, okay, let's all agree 9 months is probably faster than we all want to go because everybody was working 24 hours a day. But let's all agree that maybe, you know, 7 to 10 years is too long. What can we adjust based on these technological advancements that we have that can shorten the time of, you know, drugs in many other areas?
Right.
You know, people were, you know, there's a number of papers out now that where, you know, the ring I'm wearing, the Oura ring, right, it was able to identify a temperature change in people 5 days before they felt it. And so it was sort of giving you a warning sign that you might be developing COVID. Now, it's not just COVID. A temperature change could mean a lot of stuff. But if you thought you were getting sick, maybe you wouldn't work out as hard that next day. Maybe you wouldn't get on that plane. Maybe you take care of yourself just a little bit so that you recover faster. So these are the sorts of things. I mean, I know COVID is horrible and everybody wants to get beyond it. But I would tell you that I think COVID has caused people to change and adopt things much, much faster than they ever would have. Telemedicine being one of them.
Right. Okay. So is with AI, where is it going to fit in, and where should it fit in that maybe it's not now?
Oh my God, there's almost no place it's not fitting in or wedging itself in. I mean, you know, from discovering new drugs to developing that drug to testing it out in the wild, because now we can get real-time data off of people.
Right.
Where they, you know, you don't have to have them necessarily come into the center. I can actually have them put a wearable on and see them live. To, you know, monitoring people in a hospital, to monitoring themselves at home through these other, you know, through these, you know, different wearable devices that we've just been talking about. I don't think there's one area where I haven't seen, you know, some form of AI having an impact and moving the needle.
So with it being so intertwined with our health in the now and in the future, what are the concerns there?
Yeah, I mean, I would say I always security is an issue. I think that's getting better and better. I mean, I've been looking at companies to invest in that have some incredible offerings that they'll be able to bring to market. But security is a big issue. But to be quite honest, I think everybody needs to be worried about security in everything that they do online.
Definitely.
You know, the bias dynamics, you know, we've always got to keep, you know, people's feet to the fire so that we, you know, if they develop something that it has the, you know, groups of people or data set that will not make it biased. But I think that's a transitory stage. Like we're going to get, it's getting easier to get the data so that we can train these models better and better over time. I mean, those would be the two big ones that stick out to me. I mean, to be quite honest, I think, you know, in the next few years, if your hospital system or physician isn't implementing some of these tools, you got to ask yourself, am I in the right place?
The one thing you mentioned earlier that I didn't even think about was the supply ordering. You know, saying that, oh, if a hospital receives notice through this AI early on that they need to maybe order some additional supplies for something, like, that's huge right there, to just have the supplies in-house and then to have this to augment the doctors so that they can focus. Because what we've seen, you know, in the pandemic is a lack of supplies and really ramping up the amount of doctors there, or they're just making it so the doctors can be more productive because of the various notifications. Like, I mean, I could see that that's huge.
Yeah, I think the way that, you know, all of these systems are being positioned right now is productivity and sort of as an assistant. There are a number of systems out there now that help with staffing, like how to think about staffing so that, you know, people don't get burned out. Looking right at, you know, time of day, what's going on, what usually happens, how many people come in, how many, and being able to adjust it accordingly. Computers are much better at looking at that much data than a person.
Right.
So it can enhance that sort of thing. On the other hand, from a profitability perspective, you know, when people cancel appointments, the system can help other people book that appointment so that the, you know, the pattern stays full, right? So there's a number of areas where we're seeing this have a significant impact. And it's not just on the, you know, the immediate patient side, but how the system itself runs.
Yeah.
But I'm also seeing where these things are going to open up different opportunities. So like, you know, CVS is doing more and more with its MinuteClinic, right? So you can imagine that they may have some of these devices there. And if the device identifies a problem, could they say, you know, Russ, please step into this room. The physician would like to speak to you over the system about what we saw. So instead of like, oh, you've got to go to your doctor, you've got to make another appointment, they might be able to immediately triage it there. And right. That's where I'm seeing
That's
sort
cool.
of this technology being able to take us. Samsung announced you would be able to subscribe on their new televisions, and it has a telemedicine component built into it.
Wow. That's cool. Yeah. I saw a light bulb that takes the temperature of people in the room. I don't know how accurate or how this is possible, but it takes a person's temperature. I'm like, this is crazy. It was something new at CES this year that
I haven't seen that one possible. but you know, I remember years ago, you know, when I was interacting with Philips, is they had built an app with that through your camera would be able to determine temperature. Wow. There's now ones that will, you know, determine blood pressure.
Hmm.
You know, so we're pushing the envelope like all the time on this. There's a woman here at MIT, Regina Barzilay. Her image analysis system can see the emergence of breast cancer about 5 years before a person can actually call it.
Wow. Wow.
So, you know, you start seeing these, you know, different types of systems being put into place, and you can see a dramatic impact on human health.
Yeah. Well, just that alone, I mean, to be able to detect cancer sooner, I mean, you know, before it's stage four or, you know, whatever, that's huge. That's amazing.
Yeah. And there are a number of companies out there now that make, you know, Grail is one, which is in the Bay Area, and Guardant is another, which is in the Bay Area. And they have a blood test that will look for, you know, tumor DNA, where they can detect it. Right now it's being used in what's called therapy monitoring. In other words, you had cancer, they're giving you therapy. They're looking like, is that therapy working or not? Right. Instead of waiting for another tumor to grow. Like, let's look at it in between and course correct if it's not working. But essentially, they're all trying to get to what's called early detection. Can we see those same tumor markers early? And so, you know, I had written a paper about 4 years ago saying, you know, one of these days we're all going to joke that what's this thing, cancer? Like, because we're going to detect it so early and be able to actually do something about it that it becomes less and less of a major issue.
Right.
Hopefully.
Yeah. You said you are investing in this. You've written a book on this. You've got a podcast on this. Why did you decide to make this your focus?
Oh, I've been in healthcare since like the early, you know, as soon as I graduated college. And, you know, I've been incredibly lucky. I've always been at companies or you know, been at the bleeding edge of what's happening. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine being anywhere else because, you know, first of all, it's like I'm learning something almost daily.
Right.
You really are, like, when you bring one of these things to market, you are having a major impact on a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Don't misunderstand me. It's also very profitable to do that, right? If you make the right decisions. But it's not just a decision and then a profit. It's a decision and it has a profound impact on people's lives. Right. So you get sort of a double whammy from what you're doing. And so that makes it a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you get to make a difference. I mean, when you think about it too, like we talked about the pandemic earlier, how different would the pandemic have been without the AIs that we have, right? Without the technology that we have. I mean, it would have been significantly worse.
Yeah, it would have been a lot worse. So, and we're going to need these technologies because there are, you know, there are probably much more dangerous things that will eventually like come up. But we're making advancements all the time in trying to move the ball forward faster and then trying to make sense of that data faster so that we know what to do next.
Right. So your book, The Future You, How Artificial Intelligence Can Help You Get Healthier, Stress Less, and Live Longer is available. It's on Amazon, but there's also your podcast. Can you tell us a little about your podcast?
Yeah, sure. The name of the podcast is my name, The Harry Glorikian Show. It's all about where I have conversations and discussions with, you know, people in the field that are working on these different technologies. And it's everything from, you know, people from the patient side to people on the industry side and physicians about, you know, why is it moving the needle? What is it doing? How is it lowering cost? Why should anybody care? Right. And, you know, it's, I think I just did my 81st episode. So there's, awesome. You know, it's been fun. It's been a lot of fun to talk to all these people. Yeah. And, I will always say that it's impossible not to learn something in every conversation.
Nice. Well, the listeners of this podcast love to learn more, hence the name of the podcast. So if you want to learn even more about this, we sort of did the 101 course on this. Definitely check out Harry's book and Harry's podcast. Harry, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you for listening and subscribing to Learning More. We encourage you and thank you for rating this podcast and sharing it with friends. As with any podcast that gives medical or legal opinion, the information is not meant to substitute professional advice. And we encourage you to consult a professional to discuss your exact needs. I invite you to check out my other podcast. It's called This Is Today, where you'll learn the history of each day, including national events and some fun stories. This Is Today is available wherever you get your podcasts. All right, with the great resignation and the big quit, well, we got to talk about your career, right? So on the next Learning More, we are going to learn about your career toolkit. What should be in that? We'll learn what that should be from Mark Hershey on the next episode of Learning More. Hey, if you've got something that you'd like to learn more about, well, let us know. Head over to our website and submit your ideas for future episodes or comments. You can do so at learningmorepodcast.com. Again, thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. I'm Russ, and I look forward to learning more with you next time.